And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy, and today we're going right down the rabbit hole. Right down the rabbit hole. This is volume 10 of Down the Rabbit Hole. You know, every once in a while, I just want to do one of these programs. You know, it's sort of it's like Alice in Wonderland when she, you know, went with the rabbit, right down into the rabbit hole. And around she went. When she got down there, she found the strangest thing. Remember the Red Queen and all? It's Alice in Wonderland. I don't really think it was a book made for kids, do you? I think there are a lot of strange messages there in Down the Rabbit Hole. Of course, it was called Alice in Wonderland. And today we're going to take you down the rabbit hole. You're going to see Cuba as you've never seen it. Or Cuba. Cuba. Senator Marco Rubio came from Cuba, and Senator Ted Cruz, his father was a Cuban. So we have two famous senators that have Cuban origins. We're going to talk about Cuba and its connection to Israel. Strangely, Cuba has a lot of unusual connections, let's say, the communists of Cuba. Because Israel itself is a communist country. Now, I know you're thinking I'm saying that because I'm an anti-Semitic hater, right? No, I'm telling you the truth. Israel is a communist socialist country. And, of course, so is Cuba. And there are connections between the two. And we'll discuss those. We'll talk about gun control now. How can we get gun control with Cuba and Israel? I don't know, but somehow it's all down there in that rabbit hole. We'll talk about global warming. I love to talk about global warming. You know, it's been cold this week. And the global warming people, they don't seem to want to come out of their rabbit holes. They're all hiding down there. Al Gore is down there just shivering. But we'll pull him up out of the hole, grab him by the tail and pull him right up. Immigration amnesty. Of course, amnesty is a term that you're not supposed to talk about. You're just supposed to vote for it. Mm-hmm. Crack cocaine. I don't know how I got crack cocaine down the rabbit hole, Jerry. I really don't. You know, I've never taken crack cocaine. I've never even smoked marijuana. Well, I guess I'm really behind. I need to go up to Oregon and Washington State, maybe California. No. I need a doctor's certificate to get me some pot? I don't need that. You know, I found about pot a long time ago. It's true. A pothead is a dummy. I mean, let's face it. People say, do you have something religious against pot? No. If you want to, you know, stunt your own mind, go ahead and take it. I mean, it's like taking, you know, arsenic or, you know, some kind of poison a little bit at a time. You know, when I was in the Air Force as a commanding officer, I saw a lot of potheads. We had to discharge them. And I saw kids that would come in the Air Force, good, clean kids. Boy, they were bright. They dressed good. They worked good. And then they went in with the wrong friends and began to smoke pot. And, you know, pretty soon they became lethargic, lazy. They didn't think quite as well. Couldn't do their job as well. Couldn't put two sentences together. They thought they were okay. Turned out they were, you know, smoking pot. And I felt bad for them. A lot of them, we had to give them bad discharges. Potheads. I've seen a lot of bad things. Now, I know they say, oh, there's nothing wrong with pot. It doesn't harm you at all. It's no worse than alcohol. Hey, I don't drink alcohol either, so there you go. But pot is especially bad. And, you know, doctors are finding that out now. And Google. Robots. Google is big into robots, believe it or not. And also a few other insanities. So today is going to be an insane show. Today we have our Alice in Wonderland Down the Rabbit Hole show, and we're just talking about being insane. Now here's something insane for you. 5 years ago today, Al Gore predicted that the North Polar ice cap would be completely free of ice. There will be no ice left. Now, Al Gore's probably forgot that he made that prediction. But I'm here, folks, so that I can help people like Al Gore to remember. Now, he smoked too much pot back in his college days, and therefore he doesn't have much of a memory. But I'm going to help, you know, Al Gore remember. He told them back in 2008 in Germany, he told his audience, the entire North Cap will disappear in 5 years. Well, the global warming specialist went by ship to see the results of all of their research, and they got stuck in the ice. They find out there's about 6 times as much ice this year as last year. And down at the South Pole, whoa, I mean, that place is just brimming with ice. So there's ice and snow everywhere, and the polar bears have plenty of places to romp around and drink their Coca-Colas. They do drink, don't they? Big white bears, don't they drink Coca-Cola? That's what I've seen on TV. Every polar bear has a Coca-Cola in his hand, and I guess all the – hey, come on. This is an insane show. Why can't we talk about the polar bears? But that's what he said. Now – He began in 2007 predicting the end of the ice. But Al Gore doesn't want to tell you about that, but it's true. He predicted the North Pole would have no ice in 5 years. Wow. He said it was a computer. He said the computer models tell us this. Well, garbage in, garbage out. You know, you tell the computers what you want. And they're not independent. They're coming out with a quantum computer now, the National Security Agency, and it's going to tell them what to do. So I guess we're all going to start taking orders from a computer. But right now, we give the orders to computers, and we tell the computers the North Pole will have no ice in 5 years. And they tell us back, the North Pole will have no ice in 5 years. Then we go out and tell all the people the North Pole will have no ice in 5 years. And then we all look like idiots in 5 years when there's plenty of ice there. And Gore sure does look like an idiot, let's face it. You know, the guy, you never see the guy very much. He's, you know, he's just not around very much. Remember how I used to go on the, you know, the Jay Leno show and the Tonight Show and then the David Letterman show and all that? He's not seen very much now. That's a shame. Now we go to Cuba for some more insanity. And I was reading an article recently by Lawrence Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N. And it's entitled Castro Reaches Out to Israel. And it says that Cuba's appeal to Israel has worked brilliantly. And he's getting all kind of foreign investment from Israel. Well, you know, the United States cannot trade with Castro. That's why he has all those old cars there. Hey, if you want to go somewhere, go to Cuba, because it looks like it's still 1950s. All the old American cars are there. It's because we can't trade new cars. Just amazing. Well, according to this article, there's a lot of interesting things in here. It seems that Castro has always been pro-Israel. And he should be, because it says here that, well, let me just read it to you. Castro comes by his interest in Jews honestly, writes Solomon. As he himself has often remarked, he is descended from the Marranos, Spanish Jews, who were forced to convert to Catholicism during the Spanish Inquisition. Oh, yeah. He's always been a covert Jew. He says, I'm a Jew. That's why he was a communist. Because most Jews are communist. They started communism. Karl Marx was Jewish. And so was Fidel Castro. He is descended from the Muranos, Spanish Jews, who converted to Catholicism. They didn't really convert, they just pretended to. The Muranos. It says that he's been very interested in Netanyahu's father, an expert in the history of the Jews of Spain, and the authors of a book on the Inquisition in 15th century Spain, a historical book. It says that Castro admires and wishes to meet in person the senior Netanyahu. He is a hawk. Now get this. Castro is a hawk on Israel's need to protect itself from belligerent neighbors. Well, you know, I don't know of any of those belligerent neighbors that have been attacking Israel. But it sure has been attacking a lot of people. It's been attacking countries there since 1948. It says, with a largely warm history that Fidel Castro and Cuban Jews have enjoyed. Now, not too many Cubans have enjoyed a warm history with Fidel Castro, but the Jews have. It says, although many Jews fled Cuba after Castro came to power in 1959, many supported the revolution and some became part of the ruling elite. Well, Castro himself was a Jew. Now, folks, from this article, it appears that the Jews run Cuba. Castro is a Jew. His brother, Rael, who's now the president, he's a Jew. It was a Jewish communist revolution. Wow. It says Castro, for the most part, treated the Jews who remained well, leading to a Jewish community in Cuba that suffered no unique privation and enjoyed privileges, such as the ability to import food on religious grounds. This effectively gave Jews rights denied other Cubans. Castro also gave public endorsement to everything Jewish. Wow. In 2006, at an official state ceremony in memory of the Jews who died in the Holocaust, Castro inaugurated the installation of officials of Israel's official emblem, the seven-branch menorah, by lighting it in a central Havana square. In attendance was Rafi Eitan, wow, the head of the Shin Bet, the secret police of Israel. The head of the secret police went for a menorah lighting ceremony in downtown Havana, conducted, of course, by Fidel Castro. It says Mr. Eitan is interested in agricultural investments, including citrus, in Cuba. The Jews have been down there. They've got land. They've got citrus orchards. They've got all kinds of things going on. It's Eitan, now the head of the Shin Bet, who has murdered people all over the world, this Israeli, owns a company in Cuba that has brought in hundreds of millions of dollars of new development. They have developed office buildings, residential complexes, a shopping center. They love the commies. Everywhere they go, the Jews love the commies. My goodness. It says President Shimon Peres and Prime Minister Netanyahu have praised Castro lavishly for his quote-unquote unique intellectual depth and his deep understanding of the history of the Jewish people and the state of Israel. A major Israeli daily says that Israeli tourism to Cuba will double this year due to the warmth that Cuba has engendered. Wow. Jews in Israel is likely to represent Cuba's fastest growing source of capital. Now, in 1948, the Khazars, who claimed to be Jews, mostly from communist Poland, were given money and arms by the Soviet Union and went into what is now Palestine, or so-called Israel, and began to conquer it. They went from village to town, killing. In one village, they killed people and stuffed them down the well. They told everybody else, get out, get out. And that's how they got Israel, the Khazar Jews. They were communists. They went into Tel Aviv, and they, of course, that was their city, the Jews. And they set up a government. The first building, the first government building in Tel Aviv was called the Red House, like our White House. Was it white? Was it red? No, it wasn't any color specifically. They call it the Red House because everybody that worked there was a red, was a commie. The first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion of Israel, was a communist, a great admirer of Vladimir Lenin. Folks, I'm telling you the truth. Research for yourself. And today, if you want an abortion in Israel, it's free. They've got a socialist medical system. They've got better than Obamacare. America pays for all the health care in Israel. Well, we give it to the government. The government gives it to the people. We're paying for abortion. The Americans are paying for the Israelis to get abortions. They have more abortions in Israel than every other country except one. This is the kind of country that Israel is. Now, I was recently reading an article. Listen, this is December 14th, 2013. CIA probe into Bay of Pigs should be kept secret, says the Obama administration. 50 years after the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba by the CIA, which failed, the Obama administration went to court to keep documents classified. They still do not want us to know what happened at the Bay of Pigs. They've got to keep the CIA invasion there a secret. After 50 years, we still are keeping these secrets. I believe, why is this? Why do they want to keep the Bay of Pigs secret? I believe because it has to do with the Jews. Something to do with Israel. They call it the Bay of Pigs. By the way, in the Nixon administration, when they would talk about the killing of JFK, they would use code words. And one of the code terms they used was Bay of Pigs. They would talk about the Bay of Pigs incident when really what they were talking about was the JFK assassination. They felt if anybody was listening to them and wiretapped them in the White House, they would get confused. So they used the Bay of Pigs term to hide what they were talking about, which was the JFK assassination. And Nixon had determined, and get my book, folks, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Nixon had said before he left office, he wanted to go into the National Archivist, the archivist, and go into the safe and get out the documents on the JFK assassination. Because Nixon knew that Israel was involved, along with the CIA and other groups, including Lyndon Johnson, in the murder of JFK. He said, all we need to do is go into the files that are kept secret, that are kept under lock and key, and get that information out. The archives told the president, you're not authorized. Huh? Say what? The president's not authorized to go into the National Archives? That's right. They would not let Nixon see what had happened during the JFK assassination. And the Bay of Pigs stuff is all kept secret to this day. You know, how many Americans know that Castro is a Jew and admits it? How many know that there are Jews at the top of the communist administration in Cuba? That's why Obama wants to open up the doors to Cuba now. That's why he went to a international meeting a couple of months ago and shook hands with Raul Castro. It didn't just happen. He arranged it. We're going to get real chummy with communist Cuba over the next few years. Israel has already done that. Now, here's something interesting. A Canadian has given $120 million to the Rhodes Foundation, the Rhodes Trust. A Niagara Falls-born philanthropist, he's called, who owns free magazines like Auto Trader, A-U-T-O, has given the Rhodes Trust its largest single donation. John McCall McBain, who himself is a Rhodes Scholar, is called the King of the Classifieds, and he's given $120 million donation. Wow. To the Rhodes Trust. You've heard of McCall's magazine they used to have? Now, he and his wife, Marcy, created the McCall McBain Foundation in Liberia, in Africa. Now, before you think that they've gone to Africa because they love the black people of Africa so much, remember, they've got a lot of diamonds in Africa. And the Jews are the biggest diamond merchants in the world. You go to New York City and check with all the jewelers there. You'll find the diamond merchants are all Jews. And Liberia has a lot of diamond mines. In any case, the Rhodes Trust gets $120 million. Here's another article about the Canadians. You know, let's go down into the rabbit hole for Canada. It seems to be the case that a Jewish seminary is now going to be housed in a Catholic institution. Now, let me start off by saying this. It says, Rabbi Roy Tannenbaum marvels at the idea that the first mainstream Jewish seminary in Canada will be housed inside a Catholic school of theology and be part of a Christian school that comprises the Toronto School of Theology. Now, I use Christian sort of liberally there, as you can imagine. He says, the rabbi says, I've never heard of a situation like this in the world in which a Jewish seminary is among Christian theological schools and seminaries. Now, Rabbi Tannenbaum is president of the recently founded Canadian Yeshiva and Rabbinical School. This really marks the coming of age for Canada's Jewish community. It is a sign of our maturity and that we will be an important part of Judaism's future in this country. Hey, they run Canada. The Jews run Canada. Even the Pope, it says here, has made it a large part of his teaching to emphasize the Jewish roots of Catholicism. Wow. The coming of age for Canadian Jews. Hey, let's move from Cuba, from the Jews, to firearms. Did you know that the year 2013 marked the fewest police deaths by firearms since 1887? The number of law enforcement officers killed by firearms fell to levels not seen since the days of the Wild West. Wow. This comes from the nonprofit National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. It found that deaths in the line of duty generally fell by 8% and were the fewest since 1959. Crime is reduced in America. And it's going down, down, down. Why is that? Well, there are a number of reasons for it, but one of them is that more people have guns. People have gone berserk to buy guns. And the more the liberals, the Democrats, and even the Republicans claim they've got to pass gun control laws, it just drives people down to the gun dealers to buy more guns. Guns are very popular. Women are buying guns now. So if you want to carjack that pretty woman with a stopped at the red light down there, Mr. Hijacker, she might just pull out a gun and blow your head off. She's got a gun now. If you want to break into the house of that 87-year-old grandmother, you think you're going to rape and kill her and steal what she's got? You may end up with a bullet in your head, buddy. She's out. She's been practicing with that gun. Officer fatalities across all categories have decreased by 34%. Firearms deaths have dropped by 54%. Wow. More officers are dying from heart attacks than are killed by guns and knives. Isn't that amazing? All you need to do to stop crimes is encourage citizens to go buy guns. Now, I've read about a couple of towns, and I don't know their names. I wish people would write to me and tell me, where they passed a law requiring the citizens to own a gun. Now, I'm not for that kind of a law, but it's probably a good idea. They require citizens to buy guns to keep them in their homes. And after they pass those laws, crime dropped significantly. The criminals all left town. They didn't want to stick around a place where everybody had a gun. And the old days of the Wild West, people, you know, a lot of them would have guns on their hips. You think, boy, they'd go into those bars and they'd drink and there'd be killings and all that. Hey, folks, when they know there's guns and everybody's got a gun, a lot of these, suddenly these bad men are not so bad. They straighten up and fly right, as we used to say. Well, we go from the guns to spirituality. A new study, according to Reuters Health, says that thicker brains are tied to spirituality. The more spiritual a person is, the thicker his brain. Wow. It says that people who have spirituality, who pray, who meditate, who read their Bible, have less depression. Are you depressed, feeling bad? You got the blue dog, as they call it. Guess what? Start reading your Bible. Start praying to God. He wants to hear from you, folks. And you'll have a thicker brain. Isn't that interesting? That's what they found out. Parts of the brain's outer layer, the cortex, were thicker in high-risk study participants who said religion or spirituality was important to them versus those who cared less about religion. You don't care about religion, then you're not too brainy. You're not protected. This is an amazing thing. Okay. Now, when we come back, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the rabbi who has been sued after circumcising a little baby with his mouth. That's what the rabbi, the Mohels, that's what they do to circumcise a little baby, a Jewish baby. On a certain day, they circumcise it with their own teeth. And this baby was injured by a nutty rabbi who's being sued. And we'll talk about that and much more when we return right here on Power of Prophecy. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. An amazing book, 432 large format pages. It's about the size of three regular books. It's $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. I wish every American citizen would get this book. It explains what Judaism really stands for. It tells you what the Kabbalah is, what the six-pointed star symbolizes, what the Talmud teaches. It tells you everything about Judaism and what the Jews have been doing in North America for, well, since 1776. You'll find amazing things in this book, astonishing things in this book. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. $25, add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $30. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. I do not know of any book in the world that uncovers the things about the Jews, about Israel, about Rothschild, as does this book. When you find out the depths of depravity of their religion, it's amazing. It's astonishing. I wish I had more time to talk about it on this radio program, but I promise you, you can't put this book down. It's an amazing book. You know, I'm getting in the twilight of my years, and I've spent many years studying this issue. I've never been sued by a Jewish rabbi for telling a falsehood about his religion, because my book quotes all the Jewish rabbis. What do the rabbis really say? What do they teach in the synagogues? In every synagogue across America, what do the Jews learn? You'll discover in this amazing book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Now, please order the book by writing to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Or you can go to my website. That's powerofprophecy.com. Very simple, isn't it? Powerofprophecy.com. You can order the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. You can use your charge card to do so, of course. And then you can phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. Ask for the book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Now I'd like to take a moment to thank all of you who have given to our Children's Fund. As you know, we have during the a couple of months before Christmas and right afterwards, we have a fund in which we provide gifts to the children of the Texas Children's Home. Now, this is so essential. I wish I could tell you everything about the Children's Home. I mean, it's an amazing thing. They learn about Jesus Christ there. We made sure all the children have Bibles and storybooks about Jesus and the disciples and the great heroic acts of the saints. But more than that, can you imagine the smile in the child's eye? I mean, some of these kids, they've gone without coats and jackets in the hardest of winters. They've gone without shoes. And now they're in this children's home. And they've had fathers who were thrown in prison. And these people have nowhere to go. They're orphans. And just to know that somebody cares about them, that you care, means everything. And, you know, I'm now getting these cards. The house parents asked the children to sign, you know, and to thank us. And there's, you know, thank you. And, you know, we pray that Jesus will bless you, they say. And I get all these cards from these kids. And I don't need the cards. They spend their money to do this, to send us back a thank you card. But they're being taught, aren't they? They're being taught things that they haven't ever been taught before. Now, the children's home has a boys' farm where they learn to ride horses and keep horses. And, you know, I don't know, but it must be true. I mean, they say that J. Edgar Hoover, the former head of the FBI, said, buy a boy a horse and he'll never get in trouble. Think about that. Buy a boy a horse and he'll never get in trouble. He's not going to become a juvenile delinquent. He's got something to take care of. Now, these boys take care of these horses. And, you know, they're not fancy horses. They're not, you know, maybe they don't cost much, but they're just horses that need to be taken care of. And the boys do it on this farm, this ranch, this boy's ranch. And, you know, you ought to see the pictures. And you ought to see these boys. They just have the biggest smiles on their faces when they ride these horses, or they brush them and they clean them. You know, to you or I, that'd just be work. But to them, it's a blessing. It's a blessing to get out there and do those things. Well, those of you who have given, you'll never know. Someday in heaven, a young boy or girl may come to you and say, you don't know me, but you helped me when I was on earth. I was at that children's home and you gave. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for giving. Now, this year we were a little bit less in money than we got previous years. I don't know why that is. I guess the economy or whatever. So we're continuing the drive now. And if you'd like to give to the children's home, just give us an offering of any amount. It can be a dollar. It can be $20. It can be $100. And just make sure you put a little note on it and say, text, this is for the children's home. And you'll get a note back, a letter back thanking you for giving to the children's home. Now, I want you to know something. We don't take out anything for administration. Every cent goes from us to the children's home. And you can check that out. You can call the children's home and find out. A couple of people have. They want to give direct to the children's home. That's okay. We don't mind you giving direct to the children's home. We'll give you their address and their phone number, and you can call them. But we'll do it for you if you want us to. And we have this project every year, and please give. Just make your checks or money order out to Power of Prophecy. But be sure to put a little note on it and say, text, this is for the children's home. Now, don't forget that we have needs here at Power of Prophecy, too. Believe me, we have a lot of needs. So if you can give a tithe or offering, a donation to Power of Prophecy for our needs, our general fund, do so. But if it's for the children, or part of your offering is for the children, designate that and tell us how much of it. So if you want to give, let's say, $20 to the ministry and $10 to the children's home, send us a check or money order or cash for $30 and say, text, so much is for your ministry and so much is for the children's home. And we'll make sure it goes in the right place, okay? That's our job. All right. God bless you for your help in that. Now let's return to our regular program. By the way, our phone number here again is 1-800-234-9673. You can call us and make a donation or a love gift or an offering on your charge card. 1-800-234-9673. Let's talk about this rabbi. Now, this was in Pittsburgh on CBS News there. It seems that a rabbi did a circumcision. Now, let me explain something to you. A lot of people don't know what they do. These rabbis are not doctors. They're just rabbis. And they have no formal training. They claim they were trained. I believe a lot of them, believe me, are pedophiles. They're pedophiles. They're called mohels. A mohel is a rabbi who performs circumcisions. Now, little baby boys are taken, and they have a ceremony called a bri, B-R-I-S, a bri. And during the bri, the rabbi swishes some wine in his mouth, and after he puts on a prayer shawl and he says a few little stupid Jewish prayers, then he goes down, and the baby's laying there naked, and all the parents are around. It's a ritual, a religious ritual. And he swishes this alcohol, this drink, the wine,
or the other liquor in his mouth. And then he goes down and with his teeth, he performs the circumcision. Well, this rabbi was I'm not going to tell you, I don't know whether he was drunk, on drugs, or just reckless. Sometime during the brie, according to the lawsuit, Rabbi Rosenberg severed the baby boy's penis. He bit off the little boy's penis. This was at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Rabbi Mordecai Rosenberg. The baby was rushed to a children's hospital where doctors perform emergency microsurgery. Now, the rabbi tried to explain and he says, sometimes it doesn't work. Yeah, sure, it doesn't work. Now listen to this. A lawyer named Llewellyn, who handles cases involving injury during circumcision. Can you believe that? There's so many kids that are injured during circumcision, this attorney specializes in it. He said this, now listen to this, quote, your average pediatric urologist probably spends about 20% of his or her time repairing children who have been circumcised. Oh my goodness. That's amazing. That's what the lawyer Llewellyn says. Your average pediatric urologist, that's a doctor, probably spends about 20% of his or her time repairing children who have been circumcised. Jews are only 2% of America's population. How many of these kids are they messing up? You know, there was one case where the rabbi bit off the little boy's penis. And he said, that's okay, just turn the little kid into a girl. Turn him into a girl. Unbelievable. Now, there are many cases where the rabbi is doing this brie ceremony, this ritual, that is part of the official Jewish religion. It's in their Talmud. They must do it. It's not necessary, folks. I know some of you have heard that it is, but it's not necessary. And most Americans do not have circumcisions, but all the Jews do, or most of them. And many of the rabbis are pedophiles. I believe that. And there have been cases where rabbis who had AIDS, who had venereal diseases, gave it to the little boy. Now, the nation of Germany, the Supreme Court of Germany, recently ruled that circumcisions in the nation of Germany would be prohibited. And all the rabbis are up in arms. Now, I don't know what they're going to do there about that. But we need to have something like that here in America. This is an outrage. And it shows you when you have a crazy religion like Judaism, things happen. Well, we go back to global warming once again. You know, I just love that subject, global warming. 2013 finished out as one of the 10 coldest years in U.S. history. The largest drop in temperature. One of the 10 coldest years in U.S. history. That's according to NASA and the National Weather Service. How did they get it so wrong? They wanted global warming. And so they manufactured it. And they said it was happening. But now we've had about 15 straight years of global cooling. And they don't know what to do. I mean, they're having meetings everywhere. In every freezing city in America, global warming people are just there shivering, worrying about this. Now, I was reading the Financial Post of London, and I came about a very interesting article recently. It seems that Margaret Thatcher, now she was the prime minister over in England when Ronald Reagan was our president. She created global warming. I didn't know that. When she became prime minister, she was thought of as a very weak woman. She got her specialists together, according to the Financial Post, and she said to them, how can I appear to be a very strong prime minister? Because people look at me as very weak, as a woman. One of the things that was presented to her was a global warming. They said there's really not global warming in the world, but people will buy into it. Environmentalists buy into this stuff. And if you can make it worth their while by creating government programs that give money out, all these scientists will want government grants, and they'll all support global warming. And you will look like a real leader. You're going to lead the world charge for global warming. She said that's a great idea. Now, she didn't believe in global warming either. She just used it as a political feat. Now, this article explains it. It tells all the names of her advisors and what they said to her and everything. And they even said, we need a Mother Earth Day. And there was a Mother Earth Day, you know. All of this came from England, and Margaret Thatcher created it. Unbelievable. It says, following the general election of 1979, the members of Ms. Thatcher's political party, goodness, needed an excuse to reduce the UK, the United Kingdom's coal industry's power. Global warming provided an excuse for reducing the nation's dependence on coal. See, the coal industry gave all of their support to the other political party. They needed to fight the coal industry. They needed global warming. And Margaret Thatcher came up with this idea for global warming and for a Mother Earth Day. And it was bought by Americans, bought by scientists all over the world. And today we have global warming idiots in every country. And they even want to have a carbon tax on everything. Everything that uses carbon. Well, you and I use carbon. Did you know that some states out in the Northwest there, I understand that in Oregon, they are passing a law that's going to require joggers to pay a tax on their jogging, on their running. Now, I don't know how they're going to enforce this. If you stay home and don't do anything, you're a couch potato, you watch TV, you don't pay the tax. But if you're a runner, you got to pay it. I think they're going to do it on tennis shoes and jogging clothes and gear and all that stuff. They're going to have taxes on it. Why? Because they say you use more air, you use more carbon up. You're a carbon machine. So I guess football players, baseball players, everybody that's in the athletics are going to have to pay this tax. But if you're a couch potato, you won't have to pay it. So now there's something good about couch potatoes, folks. If you're a couch potato, you don't pay the carbon tax. I mean, this is, it's insane, isn't it? I did tell you this was going to be a program about insane things. Now, I've been saying on this radio program that if the politicians could, they'd make us pay taxes on the air we breathe. I didn't think they could really do it, but up in Oregon, that's what they want to do. Meanwhile, there's all those loggers in Washington State and Oregon that are out of work. They can't cut those trees down because, well, there's a little owl up there or some kind of bird or something. I don't know what it is. That's endangered. But now we know that there's all kinds of these birds everywhere all over the... Well, anyway, don't get me started on that. We go from carbon taxes to the immigration bill. Now, Congressman Boehner, the House Majority Leader, and his... Excuse me, the House Speaker, and his Majority Leader, Eric Cantor, are constantly drumming up, you know, schemes with their Democrats across the aisle. They meet all the time with Senator Harry Reid and the other Democrats trying to figure out how to get bills through Congress without arousing the citizenry. You see, the people, that's you and me, folks, get angry when Obamacare is passed. We get angry when the immigration amnesty is passed. And they got to figure out ways to get it by us without us knowing it's been passed. So, Boehner says what he's going to do. Now, the Senate, they go and pass it because they're mostly Democrats. But in the House, they're Republicans, and they don't want us to know they're just as liberal and just for as much for a Big Brother 1984 government as the Democrats, because they're all Republicans, and they can't hide the fact that they're a Republican. And they want this immigration amnesty to be passed so bad, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is paying them all off, and the Jews, through AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, is handing out, you know, $100 bills like they're, you know, pieces of scrap paper to the Congress. And they just got to pass this amnesty bill, but we've all gotten smart. We know about it. We won't let them. We threaten our congressmen. If you vote for this, you're out of office. So they've gotten their little, you know, wheels in motion, and they've got this figured out. John Boehner says, you know, what we can do is pass little bits of it. We'll take the big amnesty bill, and we'll pass bits of pieces of it. When you put all these pieces together, they make up the amnesty bill. And the people won't even know what hit them. You know, we'll vote against the big amnesty bills, but the little bitty ones we'll all approve. That way, we'll get this piecemeal through. It's sort of like voting on the Satanic Bible. You know, there is a Satanic Bible written by Anton LaVey, 1966, in fact. Now, what if the House of Representatives passed the Satanic Bible bill? But they didn't pass it all at once. We'd know, we'd say, look at that. They've approved and passed a Satanic Bible bill. So what they do is they just take a sentence of it, or a little piece of it, or a verse of it, and they call it the Glad Tidings Bill, or the Happy Days Bill, or the, you know, or the Red Ones Bill, or the Horned Beings Bill. I mean, I don't know what they would call it, but they pass it all, and they pass it over, you know, a couple years, a little bit here, a little bit there, till finally they got the whole thing. They put it all together. They passed a Satanic Bible Bill, and you're none the wiser for it. I mean, you know, you're a dummy anyway. You and I are dummies. Let's face it. We're stupidos. And these people, they're so smart. I mean, they get back in their chambers and they drink their liquor and their girlfriends get naked and sit on their laps and everything. And they make jokes about what they're going to do to the Christian idiots out there. Folks, I'm not kidding you. Now, they've got their friends, too. There's the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable Group. The Evangelical Immigration Roundtable Group. That's all these evangelical churches, including Southern Baptist, that want immigration to be passed. Then there's idiots like the governor of New Jersey. What's his name? The big boy. Christie, yeah. Now, Christie just signed into law a bill giving illegal aliens lower tuition than citizens of the 49 other states. If you're an illegal alien from Mexico or Pakistan, you can go to college for about one-third what a citizen of neighboring New York or, you know, some other state gets. That's because of Governor Chris Christie's bill that he signed. Folks, write to your congressman. Write to Mr. Boehner. Write to Mr. Cantor and tell them, we're not so dumb. We know what you guys are doing. We don't want any amnesty bill to be passed. We don't want a piecemeal bill. We don't want anything to do with it. Start enforcing the laws. The laws say when a person comes illegally in the United States, they're deported. It works. They keep telling you the immigration laws are broken. They're broken because these people are violating them. They worked fine. They worked under Eisenhower. They worked under all the presidents until these bums came in. Well, anyway, unbelievable. Well, here's something interesting. Pope Francis is a breath of fresh air. after those mean old fundamentalists, Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II. Now we have Pope Francis. That is according to Father Matthew Fox. Now, who is Father Matthew Fox? Well, I talked about him in all my New Age books. He's a big New Age Satanist. Now, Matthew Fox changed from the Catholic Church because they were becoming too strict. He is a homosexual, you see, has a homosexual lover. They would not let him get married to his homosexual lover. So Matthew Fox has become an Episcopal priest. He's been welcomed by the Episcopal Church. But now he's happy. Now there's a pope that is a breath of fresh air, and he's written an entire book, Matthew Fox. He wrote a book called Letters to Pope Francis. He says, you have taken the name of Francis, meaning Francis of Assisi. Francis of Assisi stood for the ecology, the environment, and non-chauvinistic relationships. He loves the goddess, you know, he loves the witchcraft ceremonies, all that. This is admirable. This is wonderful. You are a breath of fresh air. Listen, when Matthew Fox starts saying you're a breath of fresh air, you better look in the mirror and see what you've done wrong, folks. oh boy. Hey, the government has wasted $30 billion buying human urine and all kinds of stuff. This is according to a little book put out by Oklahoma Republican Mr. Coburn. And it's interesting. It's a 177-page book talking about the stupid judgment on the part of the bureaucrats. And over, he identifies government waste. Billions of dollars. Let's see the name. What is the name of this book? It's the Government Waste Book. The Government Waste Book. And, oh my goodness, all the things in here. I wish I... 177 pages of government waste products. Or projects, I should say. $3.5 billion paid to federal employees who have been identified as tax cheats. $40,000 was paid by the government to a Denver museum dedicated to miniature toys and dolls. I'm sure glad about that. There's all kinds of government waste. Meanwhile, they cut payments to disability veterans. Veterans who have lost legs, arms. They've had their disability payments cut while we're wasting all this money by our government bureaucrats. Now, that is a shame. Well, we've talked about Alice in Wonderland and all these crazy things going on. Isn't it a wonderful thing to get out your Bible and read it? There you see an insane world turned upside down. They say the Christians did that. They say the people that knew God in the Old Testament turned the world upside down. How about that, folks? Are you turning the world upside down as a Christian? You can, just by telling the truth. Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty did it. You can do it too. Oh, you'll get people mad as a wet hen. But what do you care? What do you, you're only here for 70, 80, 90 years. And then you go off to be with Jesus Christ forever and ever. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Now that is not down the rabbit hole. That's a lovely paradise. I'm Tex Mars, inviting you to tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.